Welcome to the Calgary Sessions. This is episode number 88. I'm your host, Jeff Humphreys. Today's guest, I don't even know what's going to happen on this episode. I've been thinking about, when you said yes, I've been thinking about this one since you did. So I knew this one's going to be really cool. And I can't even introduce you properly. So please name and who you are.
My name is Kelly Streit. I am the founder and I guess president of Mode Models International. And I scout talent and sort of scout, develop, manage, and place internationally, not in that order. Of course, you have to place before you manage. And then I've sort of gotten into working with a few influencers. And then I do quite a few events, mostly philanthropic. And that's sort of a big creative outlet for me.
The scouting aspect, when you and I met the first time on Analog, it was, I found it so interesting watching your eyes.
Did I scout somebody?
No, but we were watching out 17th and you were just like, you were talking to me, you were like eyes on me, but your eyes would dart up and just see who was like moving up and down 17th.
It's true.
And always on? Is it always like?
Always on. Yeah. Because it's like, there was times where I used to specifically go out to scout, yeah. Like you'd go scout. But it's when you do that, you end up quite disappointed because it's so spontaneous. And, you know, we joke around all the time at the agency. We call it the witch. I don't know. I'm not crazy. I don't think I'm a medium. But the thing is that I just follow my intuition. I follow my gut. And it's so funny how many times, like even at the Stampede this week, I was leaving something and just something said, oh, no, you should go back because you didn't really whatever. And then I walked back and then I went back and I did it two times as I was going towards the gate. And finally, I thought, no, there's something, a reason why I need to go back. So I went back up and said goodbye to the person I didn't say goodbye to, when in actual fact, I already had. And sure enough, when I turned the corner to walk back, there was this major guy. I scouted a guy. And so it was like, that's happened to me so many times in the 36 years I've been doing this. And so it is really a sixth sense that I have about the energies and the people I'm around. And it's, like I say, a lot of people think I'm crazy because a lot of people say, oh, no, I can tell. I can read someone right away. Like, we all think that. And I think mostly that's ego. You know, oh, you're so major, Kelly. Like, you can read people like a book. But to be honest with you, with me, it is haunting how that works for me. And so that's how I roll now. I'm just always looking, always on, and I listen to my inner voice.
That inner voice, has it always been loud or is it something you've developed or started to trust over the years?
It's always been loud, yeah. You know, and that's, it's actually a frustrating thing for me because especially from some of my competitors, they'll be like, well, of course he's good at what he does. He's old, like he's been at this for so long and stuff. But what they fail to realize is I opened Mode in June of 87. And within 8 months of being open, there was an article in the local paper that said, you know, local man big on international scene. And I had 12 models working internationally. And I was scouting for an agency in Montreal already. And I was 20 years old and had open 8 months. You know, so this is something, this chutzpah, you know, is a phrase that's quite often used. It's been there since I was a kid.
Perfect segue. I think you've seen little clips of the show. I don't know if you've seen like a full one, but the gist of the show, I like the guests to go back as far as they want to go.
Yeah.
How they grew up, where they grew up, what inspired them, you know, just what was happening at those kind of informative years. Then you and I will kind of weave our way to where you are today and how this all got going. So take it back as far as you want to go.
Well, you know, it's funny because as a little kid, I was, I'm the youngest of five kids. So my mom and dad had Cheryl, my oldest sister, then Kim, then Lori, then Kevin. So girl, boy, girl, boy. And they were all, I think mom was, all had, at one point had four kids under the age of six.
Chaos.
So she had a full family, two perfect families. And I'm pretty sure they were done. And then 8 years later came me. And so I was an accident, as they say, right? But I never took that as a feeling unwanted, even though my mom would joke like, oh, you wrecked my back, you know, because I was too old to have kids, but just jokingly. And so I was kind of on my own. My parents were very entrepreneurial. I didn't have brothers and sisters my age. My next sibling was eight. And so I was always a very eccentric kid, you know, and I always wanted to do things that were like to do with fashion and things like that. So it's funny because I would go to the IODE sales or things with my mom. And
where were you born?
I was born in Wetaskiwin.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we moved all around small towns, Rocky Mountain House, Innisfail, Stettler. Mm-hmm. And I always wanted to buy like purses and stuff. Hence, I'm always carrying a Merce. Mm-hmm. And so I always had these feminine qualities. I love to play with girls. I love to play with Barbies. And so, you know, there's a funny story about that as well.
Let's go.
When Stettler, when Trisha Helfer was she was one of my discoveries. She won the Supermodel of the World contest. She was from Donelda, just outside Stettler. And when they were giving the award, my grandmother, Gertrude Streit, she had won that award. It was some Citizen of the Year, some special award from the Stettler Chamber of Commerce. Mm-hmm. And I was joking and I stood up and I said, you know, my grandma once won this award and she used to always say, Ellen, why does he play with Barbies? And, my mom said something about Barbies. I can't remember the context of the conversation, but she said, you know, I can see why it worked out because now he plays with real Barbies. And there was Trisha standing beside me and she actually looks like a Barbie doll. So I use that reference all the time because it's funny how I played like that as a kid. And then I did end up like actually working with models, yep. You know, tall, thin, sort of not the average mm-hmm. body type. And that's what Barbie is too.
What was that that eccentric idea when you were a youngster? Like where'd that come from? Was it a conscious decision? You're like, I feel like I'm different. I'm going to do something different. Or you're just like,
I don't know.
It was just in you and just came out.
Well, I'm very ADHD, but I never really got diagnosed until an adult. And so my brain was just skitzing all the time. I was a funny kid. You never knew what was going to come out of my mouth. Always up to no good. And just mischievous and fun and crazy. And if you embraced that, I was a great time.
Yep.
If you were sort of a calm, you know, melancholy person, I might probably drove you nuts, you know? Mm-hmm. Because people would often say, like, he sucks the air out of the room. Like, he just sucks all the oxygen out of the room. But it's not me being extra on purpose or whatever. I've just always been that extra guy, like just very like on. So I don't think there was a pivotal time. I've always, when I look back at my life, I've always been that eccentric kid. I had a hard time making friends, but the friends I did make were lifers. Mm. And I'm still friends of most of them. You know, like it's I don't know. I can't describe my personality. I'm pretty hard to describe. People say I'm an enigma. Because of what I've been through in my life and all the different phases and everything I do, I sort of go full stop. So, but I mean, there were defining moments.
Stettler's an interesting spot to grow up, right? Mm-hmm. With to have that kind of personality and like,
yeah.
Cause I had a friend that lived in Stettler. So I've been there two or three times. So, you know, when I close my eyes and I think of you in Stettler,
yeah.
Those are like two opposite, like, things like they're polar opposites.
Polar opposites. Well, Innisfail was where I spent most of my time. In Stettler, I was only there till kindergarten, I think.
Okay.
No, yeah, kindergarten. No, grade two, I left Stettler, that's right. Then I went to Rocky Mountain House for grades 3 and 4. Then I moved to Innisfail for grade 5 through 12.
Okay, so that was kind of...
Yeah, the main one.
Okay.
And it's funny because when I found Trisha Helfer and in the beginning of my career, well, not the beginning, it was about 93, so that would have been 6 years in, so I'd have been 26. There was quite a bit of publicity done because I'd found the supermodel of the world and I'd found quite a few big Canadian supermodels. And the media started to focus its attention on this guy that was finding these faces, you know, from Red Deer, Alberta. And when they came to Innisfail, the CTV National News trucks were all rolling into town and stuff, and it was like a presidential motorcade. Like in a small town, that people notice that mm-hmm. at the coffee shop and mm-hmm. stuff. They're like, what is going on? CTV is here. The National and CBC. And they would ask people, like I watched the interviews, if you look back at some of the old tapes, and they'd say, what was he like? And they'd be like, oh, he was a strange kid. You know, and there's all these old farmers and people on cam talking about how weird I was to them. But that motivated me. You know, like I have to say, if I wasn't bullied and teased and, you know, marginalized the way I was as a young kid, I don't know if I'd be where I was today.
So
it made me feel like I had something to prove.
Just lit a fire and just like...
Oh, but the sad part about it is people joke nowadays. My friends still say, name drop, name drop, name drop. He's always name dropping. And I do. like I name drop a lot, even at 56 years old. I'll still be like, oh, I was out with so-and-so, so-and-so, or so-and-so, so-and-so. And I'm not going to say the names. I probably will for the podcast. So. But, you know, and they're big names from Calgary or around the world. And a lot of these people are really close friends of mine now. And they'll go, Kelly, why do you drop my name? Like, you're one of us. Like, you're just as major as we are, if not more major. You know, they're really kind to me. And I'm like, it comes from this deeply rooted sense of insecurity that I felt like I had something I had to prove. And I don't anymore, but I still do. You'll always see me showing stuff on my phone. And I think even when I met you at the coffee shop.
Yeah, we hammered through your phone.
I got the phone out. That's right. I was showing my stuff from my water ski days. And like, I always felt like everything I said, I had to back up with proof. And that comes from a deep sense of insecurity, I think. But yet, if someone you'd asked someone to describe me, if insecure would be the furthest thing they would say.
That's the last one.
But isn't that funny about human nature, right?
Do you, and part of it, you know, when we met up and we're burning through your phone and you're showing me that I'm just like, it's insane because you're saying all these things. You're like, seriously? And next thing you know, there's a picture and it's like, it's all legit. And the vibe I got was less insecure, like just more excitement. This like passion for people, this passion for experiences. And that's what I felt because you're just like, you're just jacked about all these experiences you're having.
Well, it's funny, you know, yesterday a girl from Calgary that I know texted me about having a moment with someone that's really famous, and she's cool. She's not one to sort of brag and name drop. And she said to me, I texted you because I knew you'd understand. And I said, oh, honey, I've been fangirling it forever. I'm fangirling at 56. Like, people be like, why are you so bloody excited about being on stage with Fisher, the DJ, or, you know, being wherever in backstage with Nelly Furtado? And, you know, like, it's part of your life now, Kelly. But I still get just as excited as I did when I first met my first star, thinking I'm making it, right? And so I texted her back and I said, you know, I look at this as enthusiasm. I think it just shows that the pure enthusiasm I have towards life and the excitement that comes from still meeting someone that you look up to or that has a big name. I think there was definitely probably a point in my life where that was my validation.
Yeah,
I felt like, you know, the reason why people don't like name dropping is you're using that person to validate yourself when really you may be a nobody, but you think because you have a photo with them or you met them, you're famous too. And I'm sure it started like that. But now it is strictly enthusiasm, or it's just like, I don't know, I feel a need to show off to be cool. But it's changed because I don't feel that need anymore. I'm happy with my life and I'm happy with where I'm at. But I still do it. Like I was that first kid. So it's in me. I don't know if it'll change. I think a lot of people wish it would. But it has turned into a sense of pure enthusiasm. And I think in life, if you lose that, if you lose the excitement that comes from meeting someone who you've always looked up to, or if you lose the ability to see people as higher than yourself or more successful, and you're always sort of like full of yourself and you think you're more important or as important, I think you lose a big part of the excitement of life. Like, you lose the ability to be excited about life, because if you've made it and you have all this money or all this fame or all this success, but you're not really excited about anything more because you've gone on every safari, you've been everywhere in the world, you've met everyone, what do you have left to be excited for? Because those are some of the things that excite us the most. You know, reading books, maybe meet the author, going on a trip. If you've got the money, you could have traveled everywhere. So I'm kind of grateful that I still have that childlike enthusiasm and hyper sort of excitement, because it keeps me going and it keeps me happy.
And you can, yeah, you can feel it.
Yeah.
Take me back to Innisfail. I'm really curious about, there's, you know, there's some, our worlds kind of like collided in the water ski world. So take me back to Innisfail. I'm really curious to see, just hear what it was like back then.
Well, it was tough because I, you know, my mom and dad were very busy entrepreneurs. And so I was quite often, you know, alone, and I did stuff alone. And so I became a real independent kid.
What were they doing?
Mom ran arcades around Alberta. They owned all these video game arcades.
No way.
Yeah. And my dad owned bowling alleys. And so they were traveling. We had the bowling alley in Red Deer, the Bowlodrome for a while. We had the Wetaskiwin bowling alley, the Stettler bowling alley, the Innisfail bowling alley, you know, Olds bowling alley. And so, and in those bowling alleys, there were video games. And then from that, my dad started buying hundreds of them and providing video games to places like, I don't know, you see them in the middle of a mall, yep. or, and he would provide them, and then he would split the profits with the owner of the business. And then we also had a few freestanding arcades with pool halls and stuff in them. And so my mom was always very busy with that because the hours are long. You open just before lunch and you close around 11 or 12 at night. So I would go down there after school and stuff and visit my mom and stuff. But then at home, I was home a lot alone. And so I was very creative. Like I was always taking pictures of people I thought were good looking or uncoupling magazines and putting them on the walls and stuff. And I had a friend in Innisfail whose name was Craig Llewellyn. And the Llewellyn family, and he was a really good looking guy. And but he just so happened to be a pretty good water skier, you know, one of the best in the world. And so his mom, apparently her family, the Carrot family, had babysat some of my brothers and sisters. And there was a history between Craig's mom's family and my family. And then Craig and I formed a bond, like a really close friendship, but it was the most unlikely of friends because he was a very, very athletic guy. And you know, I wasn't athletic at all. I would skip gym at all costs. I think that's because I was teased so much.
Like just, they were on you just about being so...
Femmy. And so, and they just... But, and it's a shame because now I can scoot all over and when I have tried skiing, I can ski. And when I take the initiative to try things, I'm actually quite good at it. But I never had the guts to do it because I was just so sick of being teased and bothered and bugged that I thought, I have no way I'm going to go... you know, try basketball or volleyball because I'll be bad at it and stuff. But so I don't think I really am bad at those things. I think I just lost all my confidence. But Craig was good at everything. And so he became a really good friend. And once again, I think out of insecurity, it felt really good to be best friends with someone that was world famous for their sport. And but Craig also liked clothes. Like he also liked to look really nice. And he was a bit of an eccentric in his own way. And so he liked me. He liked Crazy Kelly. Like we laughed. We had so much fun together, you know, not talking about water skiing or not talking about my stuff that I loved. Just buddies. But then I started dragging in places. Like we would, like, you know, take the Llewellyn electric trucks. We got in trouble a few times and drive to Calgary in the middle of the afternoon, skip school and go to the Ralph Lauren store in Mount Royal Village. There used to be a Polo store there. And then, you know, we'd be driving down the road with like all this like electrician stuff and these big pipes and stuff on the trucks because they were like the work trucks. But yeah, he liked going to those places and seeing all those cool fashion things too.
That, you know, when you reference yourself as Crazy Kelly. Was that just like a, was that the vibe or the tone? Is that what people kind of, how they looked at you or referred to you or like, or was it just?
Well, I think Crazy Kelly is more now.
Back
then it was like, I was pretty flamboyant and I didn't think I was crazy. I thought I was perfectly normal. So I don't know, but it was interesting because I think that friendship between Craig came out of just the ability to laugh and sort of for both of us to escape, you know, those things inside of ourselves. We lost Craig in the last few years. So it was very sad that he's gone now, but it was a bond for life for sure.
Was that your Innisfail time, that relationship, that friendship was kind of the...
Well, he was my ride or die.
Like just
I had very
everywhere.
Few friends from there that I'm still friends with. You know, I've been invited back to several reunions. And one year they were offering me some kind of a successful, most successful for my class. But I've never gone back. And I'm not a grudge holder. I'm a forgiver and a forgetter. But sometimes when you're scarred quite deeply or you don't have a lot of fond memories, you know, you just don't want to go back and experience that under the guise of being quite successful and all of a sudden they really like you.
It's almost like using you for your stardom, right?
To
like,
well, yeah, or just maybe wanting to make peace, you know? I've had a few people come up and say, Kelly, I was so terrible to you in school and like, and it's really quite sincere and nice. You know, there's been other situations where I've been like, you know, lined up one time at the liquor store and someone in the lineup was trying to get my attention. And I knew exactly who they were. And the cashier said, that guy's trying to get your attention and stuff. And I said, I know. But I just kept calm. Like she didn't. I said, but I'm not going to look back. She goes, oh, why? And I said, oh, I was treated horribly all through high school. And this person did not like me. And now all of a sudden they're like, hey, Kelly, you've done so well. And I was just like, so they kind of pushed their way right up the line to come to say hi. And it's not like me at all, but I just looked over and looked him in the eye with this like blank look on my face, like, sorry, like, I don't know who you are. And then I walked out, which is like not like me, because mm-hmm. I'm very engaging. I love people. Like, I love being in places, but I don't know. It just goes to show that the mind is a powerful thing. And when you've been scarred that deeply, you can become something that you're not. Mm-hmm. And that moment, I was somebody I wasn't. Like, I'm not that cold person to do that. And so, I don't know, I think a lot of my success, which is, maybe this is a different interview for you, but a lot of it comes from some of those scars. I think it comes from just, you know, having to prove myself, having to be something that, you know, everybody thinks is great and wonderful, rather than being myself. Yep. But the good thing is now at this stage in my life, I am so myself. It's why I think a lot of people are my friends, as they said, he's just what you see is what you get. He's very real. He's very enthusiastic. He's genuine. He's a character. So all those things that happen, maybe not being myself, trying to be myself, figuring it out, name dropping, yep. have brought me to this place.
Yep. When you're going through high school, what's kind of interesting you? Is it pictures? Is it fashion? Like, what are you doing? Like, what's the, besides hanging out with Craig?
Okay. This just goes to show how eccentric and crazy I am. Crazy, I won't use that word anymore, but I excelled in accounting. I had 100% in accounting 30. If you asked my bookkeeper right now, like, there's a lot of people out there laughing their heads off right now. I am so bad with money. I don't balance anything. I'm just spending, I'm paying interest on cards that I could afford to pay off, but I just don't pay them off because I'm so ADD and so left brain, right brain, that when I really focus, I'm meticulous, like, about accounting. But I haven't touched that in decades. But in school, that was where I was the strongest. I was terrible in English. It's funny, I never went in the drama program, which I should have, because I've always thought I could sing, I can dance, I can act.
Just didn't...
confidence. I think it was confidence. I think I was just so sick of being humiliated that I sort of took a backseat role.
Yeah.
I was in band.
What'd you play?
I played French horn.
Okay.
But there was a horn player that was much better than me. And she went on to play world-class French horn for the royal family and everything. And so then I switched to trumpet, which is a B-flat instrument. And then I got to play more melody and more solos. And I thoroughly enjoyed that. And so, yeah, like, it's, that was my outlet, sort of band, but within, you know, so geeky, right? Mm. Like, band geek. But once again, that was me. You know, like, I made it my own. I was fashionable band geek. Like, I would wear cool pants and Club Monaco shirts, and then the band jacket they'd give you, the school uniform, which yep. was just this polyester thing that would blow up if you lit a match. But yeah.
Where were you finding your fashion inspiration back then? Because there
it's
was,
just, you know, in me.
Wasn't, oh, really? You, so,
because well, magazines.
That's
but
it.
But I've always got it, you know.
Just an eye for it?
Yeah, or
just?
That's a gift. I have gotten it. Like, I get it. Like, I understand interiors. I understand faces. I understand taste. Mm. And money, that saying that money can't buy taste is so true. Because I had no money, you know, growing up. But I've always had an eye. Like, I get it. Like, I know when furniture, clothes, people, I know what looks good and what doesn't. And I do believe that's an innate gift.
Yep.
You can learn it. The fundamentals, you know, like interior design, you should have things at all different stages and rooms, like heights and stuff. But the idea of what looks good with what and where to put things is just something that's been inside me. Mm-hmm. And especially with the human body and human face, like, I get it.
So high school, when you're coming out, what are you thinking? Are you just thinking, get me out of this town? Are you thinking,
well,
like,
no, I was working at Le Chateau, you know, and so here's a funny story. You're going to love this. So I've told this before, but not for a while. As I was always bugged and stuff, I loved having my job at Le Chateau. I was a cashier there. And so I would work from like 11 just before lunch until close every
day.
In Red Deer.
Okay.
They'd opened a Le Chateau in Red Deer at the Bower Mall. And I thought, oh my goodness, it's like we got a Holt Renfrew. And so I had that job. And so I only had social 30 in the morning. And then my parents bought me this Dodge Charger. It was a really great car at the time. This is like, what, 86?
Cool.
And And my girlfriend, Stephanie, her parents owned the Ford dealership in Innisfail. And so they would do things to me, like harass me about being gay or being femmy. And so they would do mean things to me. So one day I came out of Social 30. And this is a story about resourcefulness. So how innate that was in me, even from a young age. But it's a good advice to people out there listening. I walked out to the boot room and I looked out to my car, and there were all four tires of my car stacked on the roof, like stacked up. And they're like, oh, there you're going to see it. Like, you know, they use the F word, you know,
yep.
Rhymes with maggot. And I was like, oh, please. Like, and instead of getting all upset and start crying, I just thought on my feet so quickly. I went to Stephanie's class. And I said, Steph, I need some help. I said, I honestly need to get a tow truck down here from the Ford dealership to put those tires back on my car and take them, just tow it to my garage at home. And then could I get a loaner or something, please? And so she called the dealership and I got to borrow a car. Or maybe it was her car. I don't know. But it was like this 85 beautiful Taurus. And those guys were like, what's going on? What's going on? You know, F word. And I'm like, oh, honey, don't, I'm fine. I'm all dressed up for my shift. And in rolls his tow truck. It puts the four tires back in my car, tows it away, and I spun out of the parking lot in this beautiful car. And so they were just one-upped. Like, and they were shocked. They were like, what the F? Like, and I'm like, you're not going to get me. You're not, even though I was devastated inside.
Yeah.
So that, I've always been one to be able to think on my feet.
Mm.
You know, so that would say for me, you know, for anyone watching or listening, that advice is like, just think of what you can do to fix it where you're not going to give the person the satisfaction they're trying to get from you. It's hard to do because I'm like that naturally, but I thought on my feet, same as in elementary school, the Llewellyns, Craig was a big part of this. And maybe it's the backseat thing and why I'm an agent now and never went into like being the front, like a main designer or something, is that I had a Kiss band in school. Well, I didn't have a Kiss band. There was this group of guys that were all into music and they were my friends. There was Shane Gollis, you know, Craig Llewellyn, Danny Dietrich and all them. And we did this air guitar thing and they were the band, Kiss. And so they would dress up in all the costumes. The mums made all the costumes. I'd be like, oh, those moon boots are great, Mrs. Llewellyn. Ace Frehley looked great in those moon boots. And Craig was Ace Frehley and Shane Gollis was Peter Criss. And I managed the band. So I made myself Eddie Kramer. And so I even went to finding out who the manager of Kiss was. And we would sell like tickets in Llewellyn's basement for like 50 cents a pop. And I would keep a quarter and give the other band 25 cents to slip forward.
You started early.
So I started early, but it was in me to be the manager, right? And so there, when I look back, there was transformative things or things that dictated where I am in my career now. But I think, like I say, all of it rooted from, because I'm a showboat, like, it's funny, I didn't want to be like Ace Frehley, like right out in the front, right? Because he was the one that, you know, spit blood and all this stuff, or fake blood. And, but I think inside want to be that main character, but I just didn't have the main character energy. So I became very good at being the manager, the agent, the promoter. And so now in my career, I've developed main character energy as an agent or as a promoter.
Yeah.
But, you know, deep down inside, there's this side of me that kind of wanted to be just the star.
And now you've kind of accepted more. Like, you know, you can kind of embrace.
Well, I accepted it more, no. And, you know, now if I wanted to, I could still do it. You know, like, I mean, every time I go to a karaoke bar, honey, I have people just like sitting down. They're all just dying. I always do Endless Love. And they're like, where's Diana? And I said, honey, she's right here. Like, Diana is right here. Like, you know, my love, there's only you in my life.
Next time you
the
go,
only thing that's right.
I'm coming.
Yeah. And then they're like, my first love, you're every breath that I take. I jump back and forth. I want to be all my love with you. So I can sing both parts.
Yeah.
And right now my voice is all raw, but and the people are like, what is he doing? He jumps back and forth. So for me, I get my main character energy at karaoke bars. But it's never too late to be what you might have been. So who knows? Maybe I still will be on some Broadway show, or maybe I still will be a main character in something, but I right now I'm happy with where I'm at being a main character as an agent and as a manager.
So out of high school, what are you doing? You graduate?
I graduate. I go to work at Le Chateau still full time. And then
I'm like loving it there. Like just
loving
like,
it, loving like it. In, like cranking in your music. Place. Oh, we got complaints constantly from, you know, Ivanhoe Cambridge owned the Bower Mall. And they'd be like, you've got to turn the music down. Like it was like, we had really cool music playing all the time. It's like, you spin me right round, baby, right round like a record. And it was cranked. And like Susie Shear and Smart Set were complaining about Le Chateau's music. But we were rocking. We were making so much money, doing so well. But then it fizzled out and they closed the store because it wasn't making the amount they wanted. And we would walk across the street to McDonald's all the time for lunch across in Red Deer. And so I filled out an application form one time, and I've told this story before in red pen, like management position only, as I'm in my Le Chateau, like spiked hair, black hair. Like I dressed that whole part, like skinny stirrup pants with like pointy shoes and paisley sweatshirts. And sure enough, I got called for an interview, and I was like, are you kidding me? And right when the store was closing, I went to this interview at McDonald's in Red Deer, and I got the job as a manager. And if you know anything about McDonald's and the way they train, you start on, you know, Red Grill, you go chicken pie filet, you become drive-thru, like you learn all the stations. Mm-hmm. Then you become a second assistant, first assistant, store manager. And you never get hired off the street as a manager because I didn't know any of the stations, but I did. And oh, that was just another tormenting thing for me because all the people under me, this flamboyant manager of McDonald's, like me, were just like, who is this freak? And so they would give out free food and drive to get me into trouble. And I was always getting into trouble, but it's where the scouting started because I started giving cards to people over the counter because I had these Kelly Stripe promotion cards.
And what were you promoting?
Promoting like doing fashion shows. So I was producing little fashion shows in restaurants like Sammy's Nightclub and stuff. And so I had a Kelly Stripe business. And so I'd give cards to people I thought were nice looking because I wanted to take their pictures. And so, and Craig Llewellyn, I photographed him to death. Like I have got more modeling pictures of Craig Llewellyn from when I was in my 20s than you can imagine. And I would photograph all these people I thought were good looking. And then, I got fired because Nick said, you can't be scouting people across the counter. But isn't that funny that I was doing that, not even knowing that there was a job out there to be a model scout?
So you were like putting on your own events back then?
Oh, yeah. And little fashion shows.
And you were behind the camera taking all the pictures?
Yeah. I had like a little Canon. I don't know what it's called back then, a Rebel or an EOS. Or I don't know. But yeah, and I was taking the pictures and some of them were good. Some of them were just hideous. But once again, the styling wasn't right. The composition wasn't right, but the eye contact was right. And it's so funny because there's some major photographers would come to New York with me later years and see agencies with me. And the agents would be like, actually, I like these pictures better of so-and-so and not these so much. And they would be the professional photographer's work and it was perfect. Mm. But there was an emotion. Mm. They didn't know when to click. And because I understood the face and I have this eye where I can sort of see two-dimensionally, like I can see flat, I would know when to capture the image where they look just right.
Yeah.
And so these agents could see through the bad styling and they could see through all that. They were looking for that raw talent, like how you, who can capture like when the eyes are just right and when there's something very emotion in the face.
Yep.
And I was really good at that. Mm. But the composition, the styling wasn't great. And so, you know, that led me into my career.
So this like, it's so interesting. McDonald's scouting.
Yeah.
Had this idea of like putting on events. Like all these things make sense now.
Well, and McDonald's, like I'd wear like Club Monaco corduroy pants. I would like seam rip the M off the blue shirts they'd give you. And then when they would, I would go to the, I went to the McDonald's head office here. It was like Max Paisley owned them all. And they had a little shop you could buy stuff like gold pins and stuff, whatever, mm-hmm. like merch.
Yep.
And I bought this gold M, which the supervisor wore when they came in from Edmonton or Calgary to inspect the store. Mm-hmm. One time one came in, they said, why is he wearing like a supervisor's pin when he's like a second assistant? And they said, oh, it's just Kelly. Like he went and bought it because he didn't like the little M, the thread. So I'd seam rip it off and put that pin on with like, I looked mage. Like I looked major. And so I was like that even at that young age. Mm-hmm. Like that was about 19 years old.
Okay.
Yeah.
So get fired.
Get fired, and I'm devastated.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what to do. Just because I lost my job. And the funny thing is McDonald's pays really well. Mm. Like management pays very well. So I was making good money. I just got a better apartment. So I wasn't going to be able to meet my bills, like pay my credit cards, pay stuff off because I had no job. So I right away started doing more shows and more promotions, and I'd make money from the ticket sales at the door.
Yep.
And then this agency from Calgary, who I would take some modeling classes with, I would come up to Calgary and take modeling classes, and that person could tell that I wanted to do more. And so they offered me a job to work the front desk at that agency. So I would come to Calgary 3 days a week, stay with my sister in the Northeast, catch the train downtown, and work as a reception in this modeling agency here.
Did this feel like a very natural step? You know, like
it didn't. But as I watched that agency run and stuff like that, I thought, oh, I could do this and stuff. And she could tell that I knew she could tell that I wanted to do something more. So she wanted to close down that side of her business. Like, she didn't want to have an office downtown, I don't think, anymore and stuff. Yeah. And so she offered for me to buy her curriculums and these ramps and stuff she had for models to walk on. And so I went around trying to find a loan for $5,000.
Curriculums,
like professional modeling classes.
Okay.
Teen personal development, professional modeling. Because when I worked the front desk, I also helped sell classes to these courses here in Calgary. And there are things I wanted to change and I would do a little differently. So I started doing that out in Red Deer, and that lady would come and teach for me out there with her people. And then after a while, I just felt like, you know, I think I can do this better, like my own way. You know, better is a relative term. Mm-hmm. And so I started getting my own people together to do it, and the rest is history.
Crazy.
I decided to incorporate in June of 87, and it became Mobile Models International Inc. And yeah, the rest is history.
So it's a quick, you know, from getting fired to like being in the industry full time. Mm-hmm. It's a quick window, isn't
it? Well, you know, and that's the thing, like I wasn't, that's why I'm not great to talk about entrepreneurship, because I don't, I wasn't an entrepreneur. But I was an eccentric kid that fell into a perfect job, you know, because I was perfect for what I set out to do.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that then.
Yeah. But the idea of to actually, you know, to see this opportunity, to be learning things and talking to people, and then thinking that you can do it differently or you can do it your way.
Yes.
That's when that like entrepreneurial energy like starts to show
itself,
right?
Absolutely.
And what do you see? Do you just trust it? Is that going back to like trusting your gut implicitly?
Well, at that point, I wasn't where I am now. I don't have the wisdom I have now to look back and reflect and say, trust it. But I was trusting it, and I'm glad I did. Because like I say, right away I was traveling the world. I was backstage with Karl Lagerfeld. That's all those photos I showed you. I have all those pictures with Lagerfeld, Orbe, cutting my hair. Like all these world famous names were in my swirl at a very young age. And so, and then it, well into that, Eileen Ford of the Ford Modeling Agency had seen me at some event, and they saw the pictures of people I was taking pictures of. And they said, we'd be interested in you scouting for us part-time. So here I am, like owning a little modeling agency in Red Deer, half of the year, and the other half of the year traveling the world for Ford models. And so that was a big break. And I found some really great people for Ford during that tenure.
Yep.
And that really, really made a big difference, because when you have the Ford name behind you as an international scout from Red Deer, Alberta, and that was the era of the supermodel. That was Gioanni Versace. That was Cindy Crawford, Naomi Campbell, Christy Turlington, all them. That was who was breaking at the time. Mm-hmm. I got to live the real major moment in the modeling world.
And you said it a few times, from Red Deer.
Like from Red Deer.
Is it this... do you think about that up very often? You know, like...
I don't, because it just happened so quick. Then when I started getting an office in Edmonton... And doing stuff in Edmonton.
Is this thing growing very quickly?
Quickly, very quickly. And the thing for me is that I...
Is it because you were good? Because you were like...
I think so.
And you know, A, you had an eye. And then B, your energy. Like, is your, you know, when you...
But I'm really creative. And the thing is, and so I never went to art school. I never got into art. But the thing is that looking back... I would produce these shows and get these ideas and find the music and create these patterns and stuff for the models to walk. And so I started doing really big shows very early. And so when I went to Edmonton, the reason why I did that was because I was doing a lot of work with Edmonton Holt Renfrew, who Deborah Kerr, who is now the vice president of the Western region for Holt Renfrew, she, you know, worked with me on all these shows way back in the in the early 90s, late 80s. Mm. So
everything, like, you're making big moves very early.
Very early.
And just...
And where that confidence came from, I don't know, because I was doing big shows like the opening of the McDonald's Hotel, reopening with, like, the Edmonton Oilers as my male models, and Holt Renfrew as the clothes. So that's very daunting.
Yeah. Did you... You're young, naive. Is it just, you know, I'm just moving in this direction, it's my only option? Like, what actually powered you through this?
Well, I'd been to Europe. I'd seen the shows. And so I tried to bring back those ideas that I would see on those runways to Alberta.
Mm. Which is, like, Europe to Alberta. Right. Like, it's a big difference.
But that's why they were so well received. Mm. And I think that that's what gave me that reputation of doing excellent shows from a young age.
Yeah. So how does this
stampede throat? Like, honestly, at all these events I've been going to, like, I've been yelling and yelling, and so I'm trying to keep that throat clear as I can, but it's all raspy and tickly.
You sound totally fine.
Okay, good.
So what starts happening? You know, when this thing gets incorporated in 86.
87.
Sorry.
Yeah.
And so what does this momentum look like? You know, like, are you...
Well, I won an award. I won the Pinnacle Award. I was on the cover of Alberta Report. I was made McLean's 100 Canadians to Watch, cover of Financial Post, cover of Profit Magazine. Like
early.
Early.
And what? It was just...
Because it was a story.
Right.
The story was fascinating. A kid from a city of 50,000 people, or at the time Red Deer, you know, penetrating the New York fashion scene and working for the Ford Modeling Agency. And I was on fashion television and I was doing all kinds of major stuff. So... It just, but you know, the funny thing is, and this is why this is kind of it's an interesting story, but it's not one where I can sort of give people steps as to how to get there because it evolved. Like it literally evolved. Like, you know, if you believe in evolution, like, you know, we became, I just kind of morphed and I just was always chasing my tail because I was so hyper. I always had so much on my plate, which I still do. Mm-hmm. That I never really sat back and reflected or did a business plan or anything like that. It just kept evolving and going and going. And then a few times I got myself so in debt that I had to get bailed out by my dad and things like that.
By just trying to grow the business or just
trying to grow the business or overspending, like, you know, wearing Versace and Armani and all these incredible clothes when I could barely afford my rent. Mm. But I looked good. Mm-hmm. And so that was the fake it till you make it theory a little bit, you know?
Was that important? In that
to
world,
me it was.
Okay, but the rest of the...
But to be honest with you, I think it was because when I walked in a room, I looked major,
right.
You know? Like, and even to this day, like, I dress different, right? Like, I wear a little bit of tint in my glasses, even though these are old people glasses. These have reading glasses in the bottom. Mm-hmm. They're my prescription in the middle. Mm-hmm. But even at this age, when I started to need reading glasses, I'm like, oh, honey, if I'm going to get reading glasses, they're going to look major. And so I was like that even younger. So I thought, if I'm going to be a big modeling agent and I'm going to be traveling the world for Ford, even though I was just like a scout, I thought I was like the president. So I would wear Versace. I would wear like $6,000 shirts. Like I would wear...
No way.
Oh, yeah. I had couture. Like, I had the best clothes you could buy in the world, you know? Like, I'd have the same luggage as Anna Wintour. Like, I was like that. And so, was it necessary? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Only time would have to tell. But did it make an impact? Clearly, because I'd show up at places or I'd walk up to a door of an event that I had no business being at, like Madonna's place in L.A. one time. And because I looked good and because I was dressed a certain way or my personality, I got in. And so that was an innate ability to, you know, I don't know.
It's just,
like I give a quote, like when people say, what's your favorite quote? It's a quote that says, show up in every situation like you belong. Mm. Right? I've lived my whole life like that. Only since Instagram came out, which would be 2014, did I find that quote. But when I read it, it had such an impact on me. Because when I look back at my life as a young kid, that's what I did. I dressed the part. I looked like I belonged right there beside Anna Wintour and Andre Leontali. And it made a huge difference. Mm. Like, it got me in the door. But what I don't want is a bunch of your listeners to be like going, oh my gosh, then I just go buy all these major things and I'll be like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't work like that.
Yeah. There's more, you know, you can put the things on.
Yeah.
But then it's, you know, it's what's in your head, what's in your heart.
I could back it up.
How you present yourself.
That's right.
And how you just... You
and these shows and stuff that I did, these events, were very high profile. And so if I wasn't good at it and they weren't good, I wouldn't have lasted.
Yeah.
you know, I would have been a flash in the pan. And that's why a lot of people who try and do what I do, or they do what I do, some of them don't succeed. And it's another reason why I'm not a firm believer of that saying, like, oh, if you just stick to it or you stick to your dreams, you're going to make it. That's not true. Mm-hmm. If you've got two left feet, you're probably not going to be a prima ballerina, right? If you, like, there's certain physical characteristics, there's certain characteristics or things that go along with the certain professions that are just innate to that. Mm-hmm. And so when people try and get people to keep going at something that they're not really that good at, yep, you're just frustrating them. A lot of people that do what I do try and emulate the way I am, or emulate the business that they think the way it should be, and they're just not good at it.
Yep.
And so they should find something they're good at, because I do believe everybody has something they're good at. I do. But it's finding that and focusing on that that I think is going to make you A, very successful, and B, very happy, because you're going to work. Yep. You're doing what you love. But these people who decide they want to be something or do something and they're not really good at it, they just frustrate themselves to keep going, and they end up being always B-list or, you know, down the rankings. Yeah. And I don't think you should push people to keep doing something that they're not good at.
I'm glad you got there, because that conversation around, like, follow your dreams, just keep working, you follow your dream. But I agree with you.
It's true.
There's something like... If you're not good at it,
you don't keep following your dreams. And it's easy for these recording artists to go up and say that. Like, one thing I will say is that you just got to stick with it, keep trying. I do agree with the keep trying. Mm-hmm. Because if you're, you know, give it your all. But if it's not going anywhere after a certain amount of time, don't quit. There's a big difference between quitting and moving into something else. And so people say, oh, I don't like a quitter. Well, it's not quitting. If you've just shifted your focus into something else. Like for me, I went to try and be a model. And I realized I wasn't quite good enough to be a model, because I used to look like really good. And, you know, like I was like almost a model. And the thing is that, but something about it I didn't like. Hmm.
And you were, did you know that? Were you actually like, have had enough self-awareness that you could like look in the mirror and be like.
Well, the first fashion show I did here in Calgary at a place called Coconut Joe's or something.
CJ's?
Yes. I was on a runway right down the middle of it. On 11th Avenue there. And I was like, oh my gosh, I hate this, walking up there, all these people just staring at me. It's so funny, and I'm so going once again, but I hated it. I tried waiting one time. I hated it. And so I realized right then and there I wasn't going to be a model, because I didn't like being on stage. But yet now you can't get me off the stage. Mm-hmm. Like, I love showing off, and I love being all flamboyant. So
what do you think that switch is? When does that confidence show up? You know, is it just over all the years and all these experiences, you're just like, okay, this is who I am, and I'm willing to just like be this in public?
Well, I think, like I say, it was there as a kid. Got beat out of me in late elementary, junior high, senior high. So I was quite reclusive, not reclusive with my friends, mm-hmm. but I wasn't like, well, I don't want to use the word reclusive. What's the word for it? Like, I didn't have the confidence, hence I didn't try tons of things in school.
Yep.
Like, I should have been in drama. Should have been in all those things, but I should have tried out for Students Union, all that stuff, but I never did. And so, I don't know, I think the switch came when, from, you know, I don't want to go so far as to say abuse, but like all the,
torment.
All the insecurity, the teasing, that you're not going to make it, oh my goodness, you're such a this, you're such a that. And I thought, you know, I'm going to be that. Screw you. I'm going to make it. And so out of that drivenness to prove something, I found a niche, honed it, and became one of the best in the world at it.
Mm-hmm. When you said there was some like financial difficulties for a while.
Yeah.
When you get pushed into that corner.
Yeah.
And is your only move to fight your way out of it? Like, were you willing?
Yeah, I never, ever, bankruptcy was never an option for me. And a lot of people have been very successful, very big successful business people. I mean, even the president of the United States, Trump, they use that vehicle that the government gives you to keep trying something new, move on. Mm. But for me, because I never wanted to like not pay my bills and stuff like that, I just fought through it. I paid all the bills. I did everything I could. And I did some stupid things because I had debt relief and opportunities for it, but I didn't take it. I wanted to pay that bill back. So yes, it was just this desire to succeed and to fight and to always be able to say confidently that, you know, I paid my bills.
Mm-hmm. Where does that come from? Is that?
I think that comes from my mom and dad.
Yeah,
they were very much like those kind of people. And it was just built. It was, you know, built into you.
They don't talk about it. They didn't sit you down and say, "Hey, it's like very important for you to, you know."
No, I don't think I got that lecture or anything like that. No.
You just saw it.
You just saw it, and I don't know. I think that is also ingrained in you as a human, right? Mm-hmm. You know, because I live on the edge. Like I always say, like if you're not living on the edge, you're taking up too much space. Do you know what I mean? So I do live on the edge, but I don't dive off, right? And so that's why I never fell into like a whole life of any of these really dark places that I could have gone to, because my industry is filled with that.
Like all of it.
All of it. Yep. And it's all there for me. And I dabbled in it. I played, but I never, ever went off the edge. You know, I never took it to the point where it would ruin my life.
Hmm. Where do you think you got that?
That I don't know. That is a tough Cobes. That is a tough situation.
You're right. I know nothing, obviously, but you see the headlines, you see all the things about the industry, right? And just you being you.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people, that's like going back to what I was saying, is you're not really that good at it. A lot of people get into the industry because of all the girls or because of all the guys or whatever it is that they're into. Mm-hmm. And so that's for all the wrong reasons. Mm-hmm. Or these big financial backers that back these companies that, you know, get model agents to provide them girls and all these things. Like, I don't know, I was always grossed out by that. Mm. And so for me, I can't really say why or how, but it once again boils back to the fact that you can tell the people that are doing something because they truly love the art and the passion of it and the creativity versus the people that do it strictly for like the hot girls or the hot guys or the sexiness of it.
Yeah. What was your... I've twisted this around a couple of times. What was the unlock for you? What was this like?
I know you keep trying to figure out that answer, but I can't think of one.
It was
like
it
just evolved. And like I say, I'm always overcommitting. So I always had so much I had to do or get done or finish up that I never had time to, I guess, unlock. Like when you say unlock, what do you mean specifically?
I mean like come out of your shell.
Oh, honey, I was born with Manola Blahniks on. Like I was like, I came out of the womb, I think, out of my shell. Like I've always been out of my shell. Hence the reason why if I'd have kept my mouth shut a little bit more, maybe I wouldn't have been teased and tormented so much. Because this is another thing I have, and a lot of people who know me really well know it. Those that don't know me think I'm just this showboat that sucks all the air out of the room. But I have incredible self-awareness. Like I'm not scared to say I was a name dropper. I'm not scared to say that I can see where I could overwhelm people. I cut people off. I interrupt. I do stuff, finish sentences. I'm trying to help all the time, but really sometimes you need to just listen. And so I take responsibility for a lot of the teasing and things that I got because I probably provoked a lot of it. And so that's why I don't walk around with a victim mentality. You know, you can hear me talking about this, not like, oh, I was beaten up and stuff. I don't have a victim mentality, even though I was a victim for sure. Because I have great self-awareness and I know that it takes two sides to every coin, right? And so that is a big thing that I think people really need to really take a good look at is always try and look at things from other people's perspective. Because if you don't, you'll always be like, oh, I got screwed, or that person did this to me, or that person did that. But you got to look at what you did to help it get there too.
Which is, it's in that same vein of like that dream conversation, right? If you just dream, and you don't have the self-awareness to understand you can't do that, you go down this path that makes no sense.
Right.
So Mode is massive. Mode is a monster.
It is and it isn't. When it is just an agency in Calgary and Edmonton. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, it's not like we're a big New York agency, but we represent people at that level, like at that standard, right?
So and the growth, me having my own business, and it's kind of growing organically. It's, you know, I don't go out and sell things. It's like this organic growth. When Mode started, when it started to kind of catch, was it very organic? You're just in the right place, right time, doing the right things, you know, being a good human, making good decisions, and just organically became this.
I think the best decision I made at Mode was early on is to be very philanthropic, like to give back. Because even at a young age, I was doing shows for Alberta Winter Games, for the Breast Cancer Foundation, for women's health. And so,
are those near and dear to you? Did you like select those for?
Well,
a reason?
I did them at first because I love doing big galas, big fashion shows. But then I realized the importance of it, of businesses giving of their time and giving back. And to be honest with you, I would say that that's peace and that side of my business is one of the main reasons of my success today.
You did it with good intentions. That's like, you're not looking at these opportunities like.
Well, good intentions is wanting to be doing the most major fashion show in Edmonton with all designer clothes. I mean, when you're a bit of a show off, I mean, that's the dream show off, right? So maybe it wasn't the most purest of intentions because I wanted to be out there in front.
Yeah.
But then you're sitting there, the show's over, people are crying, they loved it. And there's women up there saying that, you know, this building that you built, this house, Compassion House, is one of the houses we helped build through this fashion show I did in Edmonton for years called Fashion with Compassion. 20 years or more, I think it was. And it was a house where people could go that didn't have a place to stay while they're undergoing breast cancer treatment in Edmonton. And when you start hearing the testimonials and stuff, you start realizing, holy mackerel, like, we've made a huge impact. And so then, of course, yes, the focus changes and your intention is to help. But when you first started doing it, it was because it was the right thing to do and it was a smart thing to do for your business. So I don't want to act like I'm like this, like Mother Teresa, like, oh, I did it because I wanted to be this like kind soul. Even though I am a good guy that way, I'm very philanthropic. I learned that very quickly by doing it. And so I would, you know, say to a lot of your listeners, those that are cheap or only want to focus on business, and they don't waste any time and they don't have very few words for anyone, I think you should change that, because if once you start giving back, I believe that karma starts to come your way. People start to respect you. They like you. You make friends in high places. They see you as genuine. They bring you in their inner circle. And then all of a sudden you become one of them. And for me, that's what's happened. From that philanthropic work, I met some really cool people and very successful people. And so now, you know, I roll with the best. And I really do. Some of the most prominent Canadian businesses and business families are some of my best friends. And I think that that came from all of this work that I did, where I got to sit on boards and committees with those people. And then I delivered. So I said I was going to do it. I did it. And they loved it. If you don't deliver, if you just go on those boards to meet those people and then you're, you know, you're sitting on a board meeting and you're talking about something to help get some charity out of a hole or whatever. And then the second the meeting's over, you're walking up the room and saying, hey, by the way, Joe, you've got a huge business there and I've got this idea, this opportunity, and I'd love, do you have time for a coffee? I wasn't that guy. Like a lot of my wealthy friends will say, Kelly barely ever asks us for money, if ever, you know, to be a part of a business or a startup and stuff like that. Whereas a lot of these really entrepreneurial guys or girls are on it like right away. It's all about the connections, but for the wrong reasons. Then those people, because I'm one of those people now, we can see right through it. You can see through it because it happens too quick. You feel the confidence that you're telling some billionaire that he should be investing in this great idea of yours when you've barely even met him. I just don't, I think that's the wrong way to approach it.
It's like you're going for the ask before building a relationship.
That's right. And and even then, you clearly did get involved in those things just because Kelly said it's the right thing to do on your podcast because that's how you meet cool people. You can see through it. Because the other thing people tend to fail to realize is that those people are there for a reason. They're really smart. Like they're clever. Like they're, you don't get that successful or you're not that big of an actor or model or anything if you're not smart and you can't read between the lines or you don't have good intuition. So you're not fooling anyone. And it also brings you back to this, which you didn't ask, but I'll tell you. People that say, oh, you're a star maker. You create stars and stuff. No, actually, as I've gotten older, I've realized I don't. I find stars. Like it's that intuition that tells me when a person, a girl or a guy has that X factor, they have the physical characteristics, but then they have that personality or that some that magnetism, something about them that destines them for huge success. And so now I'm very fussy about like influencers, especially they're like, oh, you could help build us up. I'm like, no, actually, once you're built up, I'll open my connections to you and I'll help you turn it into more of a business and to make you more money and get you higher rates and have you protected for a percentage.
Yeah.
But you're either a star or you're not. You don't make a star. You identify the potential and then you help them achieve it. And that's a big thing where people say, oh no, if you get in with him, like he could change your life and stuff. No, that's not true. Mm. It is true in the sense that I can open doors and I can do stuff for you, but I can get you on the ice, but you have to get the puck in the net.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. I'll get you on the ice and I'll get you in front of the right people and I'll give you the advice you need and what you should do. But if you don't take the advice or you don't listen and you don't get the puck in the net, there's absolutely nothing I can do.
Mm. Your intuition.
Yeah.
Like
I keep referencing that.
Oh, but it's like a driving part.
It is huge.
And have you always known that? Or is it because now that you are at a point in your life, you can be reflective and you can start connecting dots?
Well, that's exactly what it is. Because when I'm coming driving up here, I'm like, what am I going to say revolutionary? Like, I mean, you've had guests that have these like sound bites. They're just like,
dude,
oh
my God. As you've been, I'm going to interrupt you. As we've been talking.
Yeah.
I've been clipping things in my head this entire show.
Oh, good.
Because I remember you had said that.
No, because I'm insecure. So
yeah.
I thought to myself, like, what am I going to have to offer other than just my story? Because it's a very untraditional story. And it's not like there's no university education or nothing involved.
Yeah.
But it is one of chutzpah and it is one of listening to your intuition and your gut.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that would work for everybody, but it certainly has for me.
When did you... So, this being reflective looking back, or has it just been this understanding as you're making all these moves that you're just trusting your gut and your intuition?
You know what it is? I'm out with Jeff. Kelly, no. I'm not going to go. I don't really feel like going with you. So I'm going to go, Jeff. I'm going. No, I'm going to stay home. Like, I just think it's going to be a bunch of whatever. So I go. And the next day you see a picture of me and Joel McClintock, you know, like this famous water skier, because we got to get there, Jeff. This water ski.
Yes.
We have this water ski, bond that we didn't realize we had. But anyways, and then next day you're like, fuck, I can't believe I did not go with him because I would have met Joel McClintock or Craig Llewellyn. That's where, you know, I think that people could glean is take the risk, do it, get yourself out of your comfort zone. Like, it is easy to have your routine and go home every day and people say, I don't know how he does it. Like, I'm worried about his health and, you know, he's out all the time at night and during this next thing. Do you know what I'd be more worried about your health is if you're sitting at home and growing old and accepting your fate as aging, you know, as a thief, and it takes away a lot from us. It does. It takes away physical appearance to the point that of what society sees as beautiful.
Yeah.
It takes away just so much piss and vinegar, as you'd say.
Mm-hmm.
But does it have to? I mean, I'm 56 now and I still roll like a 20-year-old. And so you sometimes have to step out of your box and just do it. And you'd be surprised at how fun it is.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, people will heckle you or they'll say, you know, he must be this or that. Next thing, it's like, screw you. Like, I'm me. I'm energetic. I'm hyper. I've got all kinds of tics. And I just give her.
Mm-hmm.
And if you accept your fate and fall into that mold, you know, and don't listen to your gut, then you will get old and you will still only like the music you liked when you were growing up and you will still only like your routines. And to me, that's not living.
Mm-hmm. We'll make this connection now. When you and I met, you know, it was just kind of like a feeling out, just like, hey, what's, you know, just, I'm sure you're just getting an energy and just to see what was going to happen. And, you know, I thought we would connect over the nightlife in Calgary just because I worked in some cool places mm-hmm. that you hung out at. And the minute that I brought up water skiing, everything changed. And it did. And which is really interesting is because, you know, when you go experience things, I'm experienced water skiing. I love it. It's super random. Nobody knows. It's very niche.
It's very niche. Niche to the point that I think it also was very frustrating to my friends, the Llewellyn family, but we'll go there later. Like it never really got Olympic sport. It never got the recognition it deserved as a sport.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all kinds of sports that are way more like, what's the word for it? Like janky or recreational.
Yes.
That shouldn't have Olympic accreditation. But I don't think water skiing ever did make it, did
no,
it?
No.
No.
And so it's very interesting, right? Like when you never know what experience in your life is actually going to make a connection.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's this skiing passion of mine is this weird connector that all of a sudden it shows his head and you're like, wow, this is.
Well, I know him and I know him and Water Ski Magazine friends coming into town and okay, I got to go. And Craig was on the cover of Water Ski and he was on my first mode head sheets. And yeah. And that's another thing in life too, is I'm very like, people are blown away. Like you were into band, like you were born again Christian for a while. Like when I go into something, I go all in, like all in to the point that people think I'm just wacky. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that just like when I got depressed, I mean, I got really depressed. So everything I do is to extremes, but which is not always a good thing. But the point is that once again, it's like, honestly, sometimes you gotta, like, so here I'm contradicting myself. I'm saying, listen to your gut, listen to your gut. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's really hard, and a lot of people can't tell the difference between intuition and fear. Like, intuition is telling you, oh no, don't go, don't walk off the edge of that balcony, or like, you know, instinct, I guess that would be more of like a dog mm-hmm. will never go into like a, you know, they'll never go in situations where they're wary. They just yep. instinctually will not do it. That's where you've got to define that difference, because fear is a thief too. And, you know, I'm saying go against like normal routines or comfortableness. You'd need to have a little bit of, what's the word for it? Like guts to step outside the box and do something that you're not at all comfortable with.
Yep.
But you have to be careful with that, because you can end up in a mess too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it's really defining the difference between what is fear-based, you know, feelings from your gut, and yeah. what is actual, you know, you just creating that. Mm-hmm. Like, it's easy to say, I just wasn't feeling it,
mm-hmm.
you know, but feelings aren't facts. Feelings are not facts. And just like perception isn't reality. But yet it is,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's, it takes some deep thinking to be like that. But I've always been that person. I just analyze it. I have self-awareness. I can't put my finger on it, mm-hmm. but the perception isn't reality thing is a big one for me now, because the perception of me is, you know, sometimes quite negative to some people, because I'm always so extra and loud, and I'm always, oh, honey. And I say, bitch, no, bitch, bitch. And like, bitch to me is a term of endearment, right? Mm-hmm. I say it a lot.
Yep.
Or major. And so the perception is, oh my God, he's just so full of shit and whatever like that. But the reality is I'm actually very self-aware, and I'm very aware of what's going on around me. And I'm not this floozy little, oh, honey, oh, bitch. Like, mm-hmm. you know, work. Like I am, but I'm not.
Yep.
And so perception isn't reality.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we have to be careful with, because the person's reality could be very different from what we're seeing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's a tough thing, this intuition. Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I worry sometimes that people will feel bad after listening to this podcast, no. because they'll be like, you know, like, but I don't have that. Like, I don't have the guts to do that. Or I don't have that inner voice screaming at mm-hmm. me, but I don't know. I think everybody does.
Yeah, I think the intuition piece has been like a big part of this conversation, but I think the bigger one that might confuse people is the self-awareness idea.
Yeah.
Because it takes a big person to actually wrap the head around that.
Oh no, I'm very much that. You can ask my team, staff. Like I will step outside the box, and I'll say like to my staff, I'll say, yeah, I know they're being brutal and blah, 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 but can imagine how they feel. Like they're thinking we're in the modeling industry. And so they're thinking that we want their kid to fix their this or fix their that or do that. But we have to tell them that that's not the way it is. Or like, you know, when you talk with the measurements in the modeling industry, and that's a big thing where it causes, you know, people to get too skinny or whatever.
Yep.
I said, tell them the range. Tell them that it's a size. It's a measurement. It's not skinny fat. It's anything like that. It's you need to be between a 34 and a 36 inch hip. Any smaller than a 34 is a problem. Mm-hmm. But no one usually talks about when you're too skinny or too tall. But you can be too skinny and you can be too tall. So it's just a range. It's just a number.
Mm-hmm.
And so you treat it like a time in Olympic sports. You treat it like a number. Like it's, you know, you train every day. You're up at 5 a.m. You sacrifice your childhood. You go to a special school. Kill your body, mm-hmm. these Olympic athletes, to get to where they are. But no one ever really criticizes that. They do, but it's big prestige, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
To like sacrifice your life, to yep. be in the gym every morning, training, psychology. Like it's psycho how hard they work.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you ask someone to do that for modeling, it's yeah. like, oh, you're so horrible. Like, yeah, why would you flawed. Make a person like, you work out so hard when they're so young, they shouldn't be focusing on that. Well, should a girl be focusing on 0.1 of a second in a swim meet at that young of an age either? Like, it's all relative, right?
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, it's accepted in sport or even in ballet, but it's not accepted in modeling. But there's that fine line where you can tilt it too. And so that's the self-awareness I have. Like, you have to sometimes explain stuff like what I just did about Olympic athletes, mm-hmm. comparing that mm-hmm. to modeling. Because I work in the Olympics of modeling. Like I literally, there's all kinds of local modeling agencies and they all say they can make you a star and stuff, but a lot of them can't. And they don't have the wherewithal and they don't have the connections or whatever.
Yeah.
They're just BSing you. And people fall for it because they listen to everything that people say, right? And that's another quote I use all the time. Those are my two big ones, like show up everywhere like you belong. And the other one is anyone can say anything. It's so stupid, but mm-hmm. it's so true. Mm-hmm. Anyone can say anything. They can say anything they want. And if you don't prove it or you don't check it out, you believe it, then you're in trouble.
Yeah.
And so for me, I realize why people are skeptical. And so I'll over-explain things. And that's me looking at things from their perspective, mm-hmm. which in a sense is self-awareness. And so, because otherwise you can be like, I'm Kelly Strait. Like, why don't you just believe what I say? Like, this is the way it is. But I don't roll like that. Mm-hmm.
That's been the most interesting thing about this conversation. The perception of Kelly to what like the reality is.
Yeah.
Because it's like...
different.
Your brain is like dialed.
Dialed, always. Mm-hmm. People say, how do you sleep? I actually sleep really well. It's mm-hmm. weird. Mm-hmm. But when I wake up, it's on, right? Mm-hmm. And... But no, I know somebody during Stampede texted me, DM'd me and said, oh my God, like people, like all the people, all the events you're at, like I couldn't stand meeting that many people or running into that many people. And a lot of these people are like major people, mm-hmm. like in their professions or whatever. And I'm like, I just love people. Mm-hmm. People, like I walk into a room full of people and it just energizes me. Like I'll walk right up to Madonna or Karl Lagerfeld. Like I am not intimidated by that, mm-hmm. you know? And that is a gift. I don't believe you can learn that behavior. That is something you either got it or you don't. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, then hire someone like me to work for your company to help you. And if you do, then tap into it because it'll take you places.
The people thing, like it's kind of, yes. it's so basic, right? Like just be a good person, be engaging, be thoughtful, listen.
But if you don't have it, you'll sound dumb. You'll go up and you'll try and pull a Kelly Strait, like you're like watching me, and then I see lots of, and then it looks so dumb. It's
self-awareness.
Like, oh my goodness, you can be just like so. Like I just lay it on the line. Mm-hmm. Like you know, I'm just me. And sometimes they think that's going to make you look bad, or if you admit flaws about yourself and stuff. But I'm like, no, I'll just say it because I can just read. I can feel it. Mm. Like when I say, oh my goodness, like. I'll introduce someone like really famous. Like I'll say, oh, this is Douglas Copeland. You know, like instead of saying, oh, it's my friend Douglas, I have to get that last name in because he wrote Generation X. And quite often the person will say, why do you have to say my last name or what? And I said, oh, because it's major. And they're like, I know, but you know, like it doesn't matter. And I'm like, but it does to me. And you'll see someone else doing that. And it just doesn't suit them because yep. they're not like that.
Yeah.
People can feel genuineness, I think.
For sure.
I honestly think they can. And if you take the time to get to know me, you'll sense that. But if you don't take the time to get to know me and you just overhear that one conversation, and I'm like, oh, honey, like, bitch, she is so nasty. Like, and they're like, he was just awful. Like, or he was just yelling at those people. But they know that it comes like a family, like the way a mom would yell at their child or sometimes they're yelling at home or just different things that you do with your family
yep.
that you're not supposed to do in public. Mm-hmm. I sort of treat the world like my family. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's not smart because people will say, oh my God, I can't believe we just spoke to those people. But it's just what you see is what you get.
And it works for you.
And it works.
Like, yeah. At yeah. a totally different level.
On a totally different level, it's true. It is. I'm very disarming sometimes with people.
Makes sense. This has been a crazy one. I know you're hesitant. I know you're thinking of like what you're going to say that was either inspiring or impactful, but I think, it is amazing to hear your story. It's amazing to hear what makes you tick and how your brain works. Cause from the outside, I would have never, ever guessed the path we would have gone down in this conversation. So I hope you can take that away from this.
Yeah. Intuition.
Yep.
You know, like they'll say to me, what do you look for? I said, body, bones, and brains. You know, and they say, what are your three C's? So the three B's. The three B's are control, common sense, and charisma, you know? And I believe, you know, when you can walk down those lanes, maybe we'll do this again and I'll walk
for sure.
those because those B's and to. C's are a whole podcast on
totally.
Their own.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I end the show with one question.
Yep.
When I say Calgary, where's your head go?
Channels 2 and 7 love you. No. You remember that?
I do.
The 2 and 7, like, hello, sure. Calgary. Yeah. Yep. No, I'm just kidding. Energy. Like, this city is a city of vitality. It's a city of energy. It's a full send city, even though we can't get an arena built. But the thing is that it's like, I think of Calgary as home. I think of it as energy. I think of it as a pretty city. But I don't give it a lot of thought. Like, yeah. I don't have this, like, this is a city. Do you realize we are the most diverse and educated? Mm-hmm. Like, there's all these facts, but Calgary's home for me.
Yeah.
And a lot of people say, why do you stay here? You could have been so much bigger mm-hmm. if you'd have gone somewhere else. Well, honey, to be honest with you, I mean, look at me. I mean, how much bigger can I get physically or, you know, personality wise? I'm big enough right here in Calgary.
And yeah, it's
there. How's that for an answer?
Agreed. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
I know this is
No, this is a pleasure. And I even did my Jeff Humphries hair today.
Yeah, we're twinsies.
Wash and wear.
It's perfect.
Perfect.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you.